So tonight, thank you. Tonight, we are continuing on our Dealing with Troubling Emotions series. This is class six. If you want to listen to or watch the previous five classes, as usual, our classes and talks are recorded and they're posted on the BrightWay Zen website under resources and, some recordings. And so we've talked about anger-based emotions, ill will, hatred, resentment, fear-based emotions, anxiety, worry, dread, kind of depressed emotions, cynicism, despair, numbness. Last week we talked about grief. And tonight we're talking about desire, infatuation, greed, envy, and jealousy. And my little subtitle is Enjoying Life Without Letting Desire Control Us. So, as the other classes have been, this will involve some small group discussion for 10 or 15 minutes, depending on how much time we have at that point. And I will have some assignments for the different groups this time. And that's in part, I really encourage sharing in this class because it's so helpful for us to hear from one another, our own, different people's experiences of emotions and how they've dealt with them. It's not just like, I can give you just one Buddhist version and that's going to resonate with everybody. So hopefully we're learning from one another in this. So desire. In the Buddhist point of view, we have very, very basic feelings. So they're the feelings of different ways, different words you can use, but like, dislike, and indifference, or attraction, aversion, and who cares? So these are very, very basic responses that we have to whatever happens to us, whatever we encounter. This seems advantageous. This seems pleasant. This seems nourishing. This seems safe. And yeah, we like that. Other things, this seems dangerous, threatening, or uncomfortable, or whatever. And we don't like that. It's very, like I like to say, even an amoeba has these. We don't know how it experiences feelings per se, but it has the same basic responses built in. And then between those two, of course, is doesn't matter to me. I'm not interested. So the idea is that these feelings, these very basic feelings, they just arise very quickly as we encounter things in our life. Now, it's true that we can change, our experience can change, our understanding can change. Through spiritual practice, things may change, and those are the kinds of things that we feel attraction, aversion, or indifference to may change. But these basic responses are just kind of hardwired, automatic, not much we can do about them. They just arise. So that's not, I would say even that's not a problem, but even if it was a problem, there wouldn't be anything we could do about it. And Buddhism is about finding what we can do to change our experience. So in one of the texts that we recite on Tuesdays, Dogen's Genjo Koan, he has this section. He says, flowers fall even though we love them. Weeds grow even though we dislike them. Conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. All things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. So we'll talk a little bit more about what that means. So we like and enjoy lots of things: comfort, pleasure, beauty, companionship, respect, intimate relationships, learning, being skilled, helping others, nature, harmonious family connections, power, not necessarily a bad thing, right? The ability to affect change. And Buddhism is not saying that this is wrong. It's not saying that it's wrong to like these things. But desire is, of all of the troubling emotions that we've talked about, desire is the one that is mentioned in the Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha's very first, very fundamental teaching. First noble truth is life is marked by dukkha, dissatisfactoriness or suffering. And the second, and these aren't truths that we just accept like and recite and believe, but the idea is that we have to really see this for ourselves. Each of these are things that if we want to be liberated, we need to experience for ourselves, explore, learn the truth of for ourselves. So the second is recognizing the cause of dukkha, the cause of dissatisfactoriness. In the translations is desire. It can also be translated as thirsting or craving. So it's definitely a desire-based emotion. And then the third noble truth is recognizing for ourselves how dukkha can be ended by relinquishing desire. That dissatisfactoriness is optional if we relinquish desire. And then the fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path of practice. How do we realize these things? How do we manifest these things? How do we live according to these truths? So what do we mean by desire? If we were desireless, if we were cold and disconnected, if we rejected life, if we didn't get involved in anything, if we were emotionally deadened, we wouldn't feel much dukkha, right? Because we wouldn't feel much of anything. But that's not what we're aiming for. So desire, the problematic desire, is taking our natural affinity for all of these things of life, or aversion, which is just the flip side. Aversion to something is just the desire for it not to be there. So it's still just desire. It's the same thing. So it's taking our natural affinities or aversions, is taking them further. So something happens from these basic feelings that arise, and then we turn it into dukkha. And that's what we're going to explore this evening. So the way Dogen puts this, I think, is this conveying ourselves toward all things. So it's like we start to push for what we want, and we start to, you know, push against what we don't want. There's an agenda. The self comes into the picture, a narrative happens, and primarily, this is about the way we think things should be. So dukkha arises not so much because we feel a desire to be warm instead of really cold. So what? You want to be warm instead of really cold? The dukkha comes in because we're like, I shouldn't be cold. I shouldn't, you know, this is terrible. I wonder how long this is going to go on, you know. So we make something more out of our simple affinities and aversions. Setting the self in opposition to the world, pushing to get what we want or lamenting what we don't have. So what I wanted to do in our small groups was give each group a problematic desire-based emotion to kind of define. or describe. Not that you need to come up with some neat dictionary definition, but just each group should, you know, first thing on your list is choose somebody who's going to report back. And then to just, you know, explore in particular, how does, you know, just a basic desire for something, a basic affinity for something, what happens when it morphs into? So the one group will work on greed, and or I have a slash for some of them. See, there's more than one term to point you at the emotion. So greed or acquisitiveness is one of them. And then your breakout rooms. So in the dirt zendo, I could give assignments. And then in the breakout rooms, your breakout room, hopefully, Tyler, are they going to be named? So your breakout room will be named what you're supposed to be talking about. And I believe when you're in your breakout room, you can look up at the corner of your screen. It'll say the name of your breakout room if you forget. And when you're accepting the invitation, it'll tell you what it is. So greed or acquisitiveness. And the second one being infatuation or obsession. The third being envy. So envy being for what others have, or, you know, what we don't have. The fourth being jealousy. And this is about what we have. We already have something, a relationship, whatever, but we're insecure about it. And the fifth is longing or craving. The sixth is gluttony or overindulgence. And then the seventh, if we have enough groups, is lust or passion. So you will, again, be reminded as you go into your group which piece you are looking to describe. So then when we come back, we'll hopefully go through all these different emotions and try to flesh out a little bit about what becomes problematic, what happens that is problematic. So yes, I think, let's see, what time is it? It's only 8:21, correct? We need to learn how to set ourselves a timer. All right. So I'm looking forward to hearing from each group about what each of these things are. And of course, there's probably going to be overlap. Let's start with greed and acquisitiveness. Do we have a spokesperson for that?
I got there late. Did we pick someone to speak? No, that was the first thing I was supposed to say. I can say a couple things, and then if people have more to add, please do. I think we talked about greed and acquisitiveness as sort of, maybe I guess this might be the best kind of culmination of these, is that there's sort of like you have your basic needs and these things that you might need in your life or want in your life that really help you get along and survive. And then as you actually get past those things out of things you want, as maybe you have money now, you can buy things you want, that it's when we start bringing those things into our life where perhaps we're not, where we're starting to feel a different attachment to them, and maybe starting feeling dissatisfied, where we start looking around and seeing dissatisfactoriness growing from it. I might be getting off a little bit of what we said, but as kind of there is, and when you have too many things, you know, they're talking about, you come to a portion of your life where you're wanting things for you have a home, and so you want things to fill your home with, and you come through this portion or this place in your life where you're acquiring things at a certain sort of your younger age, but as you get older, there's this desire to then sort of get rid of those things, and you feel the lightness of that, and we're discussing that. how it's not necessarily how like rare that you feel people when they are in a simpler space dealing with their personal needs as opposed to all these excessive things that they regret or miss those excessive miss those excessive things. Karen, I feel like I'm skipping what some other people said. Tracy had an interesting thought as well.
All right.
Don't listen to
Well, sounds
that.
good. All right. Thank you. On to infatuation or obsession. Who's the spokesman?
That's
Mitch.
me. So we had a good discussion about it, and we kind of started with infatuation and obsession is kind of it starts as this thing that you like can't really get out of your head. And then we hit on this notion of like it, generally a strong emotion is the thing that keeps it there. You know, it can be like fear or desire or lots of things, but you know, it's these strong emotions that keep this idea kind of like in the forefront of our perception. And then, you know, it can almost like narrow your whole experience into this one thing. And so you start to shut out like all of the other things in your life or in the world, those experiences that don't have to do with your single obsession and the object of your focus. And then like it was pointed out that it's almost like an addiction in the same way that you can enjoy certain behaviors in a healthy way, and then you can be addicted to certain behaviors, and that sort of addiction is where it turns negative because you can have lots of positive like interests, but I think at the moment that it turns into an infatuation or an obsession is that point where it becomes unhealthy. And it starts to become damaging, and in the same way, that's the way addiction strikes a lot of people. And then, you know, somebody brought up a really good point that, like, underneath almost all of this infatuation and obsession is like self-obsession. This notion of like, this is something that I need to define myself, or this is something that I need to be, or this is something that I am good at, or you know, this sort of like notion of a primary self, you know, this primary self-interest is at the root of a lot of it. And I think that was it. I think I got most of it. If I miss anything, I'm sorry.
Thank you. All right. Envy. Envy for what others have or what we don't have. Bob.
Thank you, Damio. Our group got off to a slow start, but we started with sometimes envy can be seen as a good thing by our society. That you say, wow, I'm really envious of you having a great vacation as a way to compliment them. And that's probably by negation, I suppose. But I also added envy is for what others have. And the reverse of that, of course, is for what you don't have. So it's a defined as a lack. And this envy creates more unease and suffering. Of course, we call it dukkha. And one person mentioned it's not accepting of what is for us. So that's it's a pushing away, a not accepting that, you know, I feel this that I have this lack, but that's because I don't have what they have. That's of course getting down to comparing our lives to others, what we have versus what other people have. And this is also, I noticed that this is like the precepts, all of these things that we talk about, greed, infatuation, envy, and so forth, all are all intertwined, because envy quite often will be part of the lust and passion, longing, craving, jealousy. Those are all, you know, in the same little ball of dukkha generator. And there's elements of grief attached to envy as well. Hmm. And I think that's about all that we had.
Thank you. All right, on to jealousy about what we do have.
Okay, we started out by trying to identify jealousy. Someone said it was coveting thy neighbor, wanting something someone else has, fear that you'll lose what you have to others, particularly in a relationship. Jealousy is related to envy in a lot of ways. When we think of guarding something, some object we have, jealously, you know, wanting to make sure that nobody else can get it. It's a strong feeling. Someone pointed out that one can't have everything. Sometimes when we're feeling jealous, we react poorly, we get possessive. Our thoughts can become irrational, because it's a very powerful feeling. It can be a very powerful feeling and thought. And finally, having power that you don't have. If someone else has power that you don't have. And other strong feelings that come from jealousy are clinging, insecurity, loss of control, short-temperedness, and even a physical feeling, feeling ill or whatever, panicked sort of. It's strong, has strong roots once it gets in there.
Yeah. All right, thank you. All right, and then we need to move our chair back over here in front of the microphone. All right, you're getting up. We might as well do lust.
Right here, good? Okay. Uh-huh. So our group talked about lust, and I started out by saying, and I think someone else somewhere here mentioned that the common component of all of these things is that you kind of have a vicious circle, one can lead to another. I mean, throughout all the groups and all the emotions. That being said, some of the things we discussed about lust, and passion was the other one, right? Yeah, lust and passion. So we in our group, we talked about how passion could, that lust was more, at least seemed to us to be more negative, and there could be a positive element of passion. For example, passion, maybe a group of people or two people have a passion for living a holistic and healthy life and the things that could come out of that. Therefore, again, lust being the more negative side. We discussed how lust can't be fulfilled. It doesn't seem, there's a very physical component to it, and so it can therefore be like a drug. Always looking for the next fix, as it were, lusting after this person, and then, I mean, you know, and then the next, and the next, and the next. So it seems like that it can't be fulfilled. Lust for power, which I mentioned to you, I think that we talked about last week. Lust for power can lead to, for example, political insecurity that we discussed last week. powerful people having the lust for power, and to what ends will they go to fulfill that power? Lust having an element of lack of mindfulness and concern for others, being selfish. So I think that pretty much covers it.
Thank you. And gluttony and overindulgence. Did you mind? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys will prompt me if I forget anything important, I hope.
But the thing that stood out about gluttony was the repetition compulsion that goes with gluttony, and the way that we use the chocolate chip cookie analogy a lot. The way that you know, you eat a chocolate chip cookie because you want a chocolate chip cookie and you think it's going to make you feel good. You eat the second chocolate chip cookie because the first chocolate chip cookie was really good. You eat the third chocolate chip cookie because the second chocolate chip cookie was a disappointment. And so there's that way where you're refusing to accept the emptiness of eating a chocolate chip cookie. You want every chocolate chip cookie to be as good as the first one. And so the repetition compulsion drags you along until, you know, you're eating the nth chocolate chip cookie just because you don't want the happiness to end. And so there's this desire underneath to have perfect control over your experience, even though your experience is always situational. That's the main thing. And of course, you know, because I've just described like a decaying dopamine reward loop, right? Anything can trigger that, right? Alcohol, Facebook, whatever. That's what I had in my head.
Is there any other
points? Okay, I think that's it.
All right, thank you. So, how do we practice with these crazy emotions? As we covered with the other emotions, right? We use the acronym RAIN. Recognize what's going on. Allow space for our experience. Investigate. So, you know, we're not leaving a lot of time to talk about how to practice with these emotions, but I think it's appropriate in a way because so much of our practice is simply like bearing witness to what is going on, to turning the lens of attention toward what is going on. Because as soon as if you have recognized, you know, you've been sitting paging through Facebook for the third hour and you recognize, there's that dopamine loop, like just that point of recognition is a critical one, right? And sometimes that may be all we need is recognizing that this is going on, recognizing, for instance, so this is the investigate part. You know, is there something painful or unhealthy going on here now? Recognizing actually this, what I thought was passion has now turned into something that is causing me to actually be disrespectful of somebody and I'm using them, or just to face that, because we naturally want to be happy and avoid suffering. So if we are able to recognize to what extent we're causing suffering, we're making our own dissatisfaction worse, then often a way will open up, or at least the aspiration to not be so absorbed in that troubling or obsessive emotion. And then the fourth step being non-identification or nurturing, which I'm taking to mean, you know, now what do we do? Now what is something that we can do to cool our passion or get some perspective or break the dopamine cycle or, you know, all of these things. So I can throw that open. You know, what do you do? What can we do when we find ourselves caught up in these desire-based emotions in a negative way, you know, to the extremes that people are talking about? What do you want to throw any suggestions of practices out there? Things that we can do or you have done when you recognize that you're caught up in this? Charles.
Well, I mean, kind of all of these things really help. I kind of have an addictive personality. And so, like, allowing space obviously, like, helps a lot. That helped me with, like, quitting tobacco, was to just, like, really feel what it felt like to, like, smoke, and feeling like, oh, this actually isn't pleasant at all. But, like, to really try and feel that instead of just, like, feeling sad that you made that decision to, like, smoke or whatever. And then definitely investigate. Like, I really go heavy on that, and I try and, like, listen to what experts are saying about the subject. I try and figure out what it is that's going on, and then I try and find some sort of book or literature on that instance, because a lot of times there's people who are a lot smarter than I am that have spent a lot longer, like, thinking about that specific phenomenon.
Thank you. You make me think of something I had jotted down too, which is sometimes it helps to either connect with a trusted friend, right? Not somebody who's just gonna egg you on with your greed or your acquisitiveness or whatever, but you know, somebody who can really be a sounding board for what's going on. Or in some of these cases, right, connecting with other people who kind of suffer from a similar desire-based drive. Recognize, you know, you're not alone in it. And how have you learned to cope with it? Mick.
Sorry, I have a new thing and I don't know where the raise hand button is. So I think, you know, I really like the non-identification and nurture step of this, because I think for me, with a lot of these like types of behaviors that, you know, they tend to be really cyclic and you tend to find yourself like looped in them. And there's always like a ton of guilt that gets wrapped up in it. And I think for me, the non-identification and nurturing step really is kind of like accepting that, like, when I'm ready to really break this kind of a cycle of like flipping through Facebook or whatever else, like, it's not going to be easy, but I don't have to fight myself over it. You know, like, I think a lot of it just is like being patient with yourself, because recognizing maybe the first or second time doesn't do the trick, but like after a good long while of recognizing, like, it becomes easier to let it go if you don't just like force it. And it's really important not to just force yourself to give something up or to stop that kind of behavior.
Well, it occurs to me, you know, like a central part of AA and related things is like, yeah, you're not going to force yourself to get, that's generally not a fruitful way, but to really like honestly examine, what is this doing to you? Do you like this? You know, like noticing and feeling the negative aspects. So I'll, you know, confess that. So I just started backpacking again. So of course I needed to get new backpacking gear, and I wanted my backpack to be as light as possible. So I made a spreadsheet and I had the weights of every single thing that I was going to put in the backpack. And then I was, you know, shopping online for like, oh, here's a slightly lighter cup and here's a slight, you know, and, you know, it was fine and it was kind of fun. And then, I don't know, at a certain point I realized like, I'm not, it's like other things in my life that I'm not taking care of and I'm not doing. And I here I am again. And I'd sit down at the computer and think like, okay, let's do this other thing now. But then I get sucked back into that activity. And, you know, and it was, and similarly, it wasn't just like, all right, I'm going to stop that now. But as I noticed it, I'm like, oh, I don't really want to continue that. I hope it kind of wears itself out in the next, you know, few days. And it has. So, yeah, it's a tricky thing. Anybody in the Zendo, you're welcome to just come up here. Say something.
So we were I think the question you posed was what's the next step that we take once we recognize? For me, which is very kind of similar to what you just said, so let's just say, for example, our group was lust, okay? So let's say that I recognize lust in myself or in my experience. So what I often do, whether it's lust or anything else, is I say, once I recognize it, I say, what are the bad things or the things that I have done in the past that have hurt myself or others when I didn't recognize it? Mm. So obviously all the steps of RAIN are very important, but for me, I'm going to be biased and say that recognition is the most important step, because if you don't recognize it, then the rest of the three steps are kind of pointless if you don't recognize it. So I think that once you recognize, I think sometimes just recognizing, not all the time, but it can sometimes be the only step. And then you can just kind of let things play out as they may, because if you don't recognize it, you cannot do anything about it.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I was thinking too about that, you know, recalling, deliberately trying to recall, okay, so what happened when I did this kind of thing in the past?
Exactly.
Yeah.
How did you hurt yourself or others?
Yeah. Jeannie.
Yeah, so some of what we're talking about makes me think of, you know, the awareness and the recognition, and it makes me think of something I heard one time. This person said, I don't know if it was in a book or something, it's like, I don't want another drink. I just want the last one again. You know, just sort of, it's sort of like, what am I looking for with that? You could fill in the blank, you know, the compulsive buying or, you know, the compulsive scrolling or whatever it is that we get into, which I think is some of it is human nature, right? But what are we looking for? You know, what am I looking for? You know, I don't want another drink. I want that last one, that perfect one, you know, again, and it's probably not going to be there for me that way.
Thank you. And ultimately, to bring it back around to the Dharma, right? We are looking for real satisfaction. And that is exactly what practice promises us. It's like real peace of mind. That sense of, like Kazan says, you know, returning home and sitting in peace. This is enough. I am enough. Gratitude for what we have. You know, that so much of our desire is, you know, trying to fill that void. And we really can. I mean, certainly there's very many ways to do it. Buddhism isn't the only way. But that's one of the things that we're really trying to work on, is to transform our sense of self so that it's not this small bounded being who will always lack for something, but a boundaryless, that's, you know, when Dogen talks about everything coming forward and, you know, coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self, we recognize all of the things that come and go through our lives, like we're not rarely like making them come, or and we rarely can make them stay. But if we can be more grateful in an open-handed way, then we can enjoy a lot, right? We can even have, we were talking about, you can have passion. Passion's a good thing, you know, to actually have an appetite for life. And what, you know, we take it one step too far, cause suffering for ourselves. All right, I will end it there. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.